The following podcast is an Embassy Row production.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Giving It Up for Less, a podcast about oversharing. How's everybody feeling? I hope you're well. So excited about today's episode. I was on a podcast live stream with this lovely lady recently, and she made a comment about, like, people who come on here aren't asking me to do their things. And I was like, well, guess what? You're getting an invite right now. So please welcome to the show the lovely and hilarious, she plays Stevie on Schitt's Creek, a little show I think you've probably all seen, Emily Hampshire. How are you?
I'm so impressed by what you just did, because we are face to face on Zoom right now, and I would never be able to do, like, an intro host thing as if I'm not talking to the person in front of me. Like, if you have you ever been asked to do those, throw it to the camera and say, like, yep. I'm Emily Hampshire on, like, I find that shit so hard. So that was impressive.
Thank you so much. It is a weird skill. I don't know why or how I have it, but yeah, it feels very odd when you have a career acting and you're connecting with somebody and you're not looking at the camera. It feels very strange to, like, turn your gaze and make it a different thing. So I feel you.
Yeah.
I feel you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me because I have had a lot of guests, like so many guests from Drag Race. I did have Dr. Drew on, who invited me to his podcast.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That was one, but, like, I'm very honored to be on this podcast because I listened to it a lot before I had you on because I do research.
Oh, that's amazing. Bless it out. Yes, it was so fun. Hump Day with Hampshire was the show. And you did how many weeks of that show?
Well, it was a charity.
Right.
A talk show. Initially, it was like Rosie O'Donnell did this thing for the Actors Fund where at the very beginning of the whole COVID quarantine. And then they asked me to kind of take it over. And I thought maybe I'd do like 3 episodes. It was just for the duration of the quarantine.
Right.
I ended up doing 10 episodes, 3 of which were 2-hour-long episodes. So, like, that's like 2.5 seasons of Fleabag.
it really is.
It was interesting that the people who, like, the guy who approached me to do it, who works with the Actors Fund and produced it, I think we all thought this would just be a little fun thing, but then I started to take it really seriously.
Yeah.
And it became a lot of work, but so rewarding. Like, I can't imagine having any other quarantine. Not that I know other quarantine experiences, but...
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
It's nice to have some sense of normalcy and to have something that you're, like, looking forward to doing every week. I think that's helpful during this time.
For me, it was definitely having, like, a job. And, like, I think that's why my agents wanted me to do it, because it would keep me busy. I don't do well not, like, constantly working. So.
Yeah. You know what? I don't know how I do when I'm not constantly working. So that's been an exploration for me during this time, because I'm so busy all the time. And at the beginning, I came out hard and fast in this quarantine. And I was like, I'm on my computer and my phone doing videos, you know, 12 hours a day. And then I got to a point where I was like, I can't keep doing this.
Right? I couldn't believe how much, because at the beginning, there were so many people being like, they're not working, and which is, you know, hard when you're not working and you need financially to be working. And
of course,
I don't think any of us saw this going on for so long. But at the beginning, I was thinking, oh, this could be a little vacation. And then the amount of, I'm sure you've got this, I can't imagine what it's like for people who are, like, super famous people, getting the amount of charity things. And, like, I never want to say no to anything, but
yeah.
It came like, you don't have enough time in the day to Zoom everything.
Totally true. And the thing that I've been finding is that some of the asks I've been getting, I'm like, look, I'm already doing this one mask fundraiser. So I think I'm going to have to, like, I can't do two at once.
I had
a mask conflict. Exactly. Normally it's like, you know, you can't do another cereal if you do a Cheerios ad or something. But this was like, yeah, it's very interesting. And there is a Zoom fatigue that I went through. And then I did take a good, like, 7 to 10 days where I was like, I'm just going to disengage a little bit. And that was helpful. And now I feel like I'm in, like, a much healthier position with everything.
That's so interesting, because I feel like we've both hit the same healthier position, because that's why, we ended the show, the hump day show ended not because quarantine was over or COVID was over, but because I did have other things I needed to do and it just took up my entire life.
Yeah.
And so, and there is a Zoom fatigue. Like I hate, I don't want to complain about anything that, cause it was all, they were all like either great charities or great opportunities. And, but there is something about being constantly busy for everyone else and never taking a moment to like, just, I don't know, do something for not charity.
I know. It's true. And I started to feel guilty if it was like, I want to sit down and watch TV. And then I was like, oh, is Tina Fey watching TV? Probably not.
No. Is Michelle Obama? No.
Yeah, no.
What are you doing? I'm complaining about anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
It did feel good to do certain things, especially when, like, I don't know, I'm sure you got a lot of people graduating high school during this time.
Yes.
And they wanted to, like, the kids wanted to have some kind of special thing, and like seeing certain things that really made people happy was nice.
It's funny that you bring up high school graduations, because my old high school was like, would you be willing to do a video? And I was like, of course, that sounds great. Like, I'll say a few words or whatever. And I ended up doing, I want to say, and I know this sounds insane, but I want to say I did like 65 takes, and each one was like 3 minutes long. And that was the day that I was like, close the computer. I was like, you've lost your mind. I don't do that many takes for anything ever. And it was just one of those things where it was like, I kept tripping over my words, or I'd get distracted or whatever. And now I'm like, no, you don't need to do 65 takes of anything. Certainly not just a cute, kind message to some high school kids,
right?
You know?
I think it's because we're Canadian, because like, I remember even hump day, like, I just had to do the hosting, but I decided of my own accord that I wanted to do a cold open. And said cold open was always going to start with like a satire on a movie. And so I find myself doing like Apocalypse Now, no joke, in my living room,
God.
Like editing it to like California Pizza Kitchen fire coming out, like insane. So I was going crazy, but I think there is something Canadian about it. It's very hard to say no.
Yes.
It's easy to say sorry.
Very
but
easy.
Yeah.
I think that's true. Where did you grow up in Canada?
I grew up in Montreal.
Oh, yes, yes.
But I left Montreal when I was 15, went to Toronto, and then moved out to LA like 2006.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So you've been out here for a chunk of time.
Yeah. When did you come here?
I came here, oh boy, full time, I want to say 2014. Yeah. And I had been out a couple times prior to that, but that was when I like came and stayed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like it here?
I love it here. And I feel like the reason is what you just said, committed to it. Like I always tell, especially Canadian actor friends who, I mean, things have changed now a lot, but it used to be that you come out to LA for pilot season and like you get off the plane, you're Canadian, you get a pilot.
Yeah.
And like, then things changed a bit, but a lot of people come out here for pilot season and hate it, which I understand, because first of all, if you're from Toronto or a city, LA's not like one place, so spread out. There's no neighborhoods. You don't walk around. I mean, there are once you discover it, but at first look, there isn't. And I really think if you come out here just for a few months to get a job, if you don't get said job, you hate everything about it.
Totally.
So when I came out, like I'd been out here a few times before, but when I moved out here, I'd just gotten married and I moved out here and we hadn't even lived in the same, that's a story. We hadn't even lived in the same city before we got married. So it was very much like nesting, moving in together, getting a home. And so it was nothing about work actually. And I made friends who weren't actors, and I found my downtown, which to me has been kind of my perfect East Coast in my West Coast world.
Right.
I love LA. Like this feels like home. I get off the plane, I smell the like Freon, and I
totally. I love that. Now that's interesting, because moving in with somebody that you've never even lived in the same city with, my boyfriend and I had been together 3 months when the quarantine started, and we were like, well, I guess we're doing this together. And so now 4 months later, I mean, I keep making the joke, and I've made the joke on this podcast, so I forgive me for repeating myself, but it's like we've been together 10 years. Like it's an atypical early relationship situation, which I think actually is great. I think that there's like some real kind of pros to that. But it's interesting because it's the inverse basically of what you're describing.
Well, I can't wait to hear all the stories of love in the time of Corona, because there's so many people who like met someone right at the beginning. And you're exactly right. When you quarantine, or just especially now, like if you just meet someone and you're maybe sleeping with that person, it's no longer like, have you slept with anyone else? It's like, have you seen anyone else?
Yeah.
Are you going to kill me?
Yeah.
By socializing with anyone else.
Yeah.
So, and you become very much like, if you're not going out to restaurants and dates and stuff, you're seeing each other in your jogging pants, in your, so it is like fast forward. And then there's people I've known that are married and have kids. And if you are in a house just like that, trapped. I think there's going to be a lot of divorces, a lot of babies, a lot of love, a lot of like, I don't know. It's an exciting, I do find it, again, I want to preface it with, I know this is a horrible thing that's happened and obviously don't want all the sickness and death and hardship.
Of course.
But boy, do I ever find it fascinating.
Yeah.
But I do this with a lot of things, like anything that goes bad in my life, it's usually bad. I'm always like sitting up here watching it. Like even when I found out like my ex-husband was cheating or whatever,
right.
I'm like upset here. And over here, I'm like, wow, this is fascinating that you found this like this.
Yeah.
So I feel like with this quarantine, I've been like this above it being like, oh my God, so interesting. All these.
That's so funny you say that, because I am definitely the same way. And I feel like it's part of the reason why I think it's possible a lot of actors are like this, because we're observers. It's like this weird, I have the same thing where I've described where it's like, I'm in the moment, but then I'm out of my body kind of watching like, what is this interaction? Well, how am I speaking? How is this person speaking?
Yes.
Like, and it really is that kind of like curiosity about, I think, human relations, mannerisms, all of the above, that I think does, this is the most pretentious actor thing I think I've ever said, but I think it does, it, for some actors, it does kind of like amplify why they're successful. It's that observer quality.
I'll make it feel less pretentious, because have you read Just Kids, the Patti Smith book?
No.
Okay, you should. It's
writing it down.
The best book on being an artist. And she does say something in there, which I can't quote because I don't remember the exact thing, but it is about that artists have this kind of thing where anything they're in, they're also watching for the story in it and for the human condition in it. And so you do sit a bit outside yourself to tell that experience, or like, it's like one sentence that you're going to like pour over, but I can't remember it.
Yeah.
And I do think that is like, not just actors, but like writers, of course. And I think that is a part of the brain that kind of mine can't shut off, at least.
No, me neither. That's, I'm going to get that book immediately. I've written it down because this sounds like it's right up my alley.
Okay.
I love it. Now, every episode of the show has a theme. And we did something on your show that you had this idea for that I thought was so great. And I felt like we should extrapolate and continue on it here. Emily basically ahead of time was like, hey, do you ever have somebody like interviews or whatever, people ask you like terrible questions? And I was like, yes. And she's like, let's ask each other terrible questions. And I was like, this is awesome. I love it. And then the joke was, is that the first thing I said to you was Emma Hamster, star of Schitt's Creek. And then you were like, wait a minute. And you would basically come up with the same joke for me.
Literally with the same, just different names. But it was like, you know, people want to know the real you, Lara Ashton. like, or that was over the top. It's usually a little subtler.
Sure.
And we both came up with the same thing. That was very funny.
That was, that just killed me. And I was like, oh, this is going to be so good. But I've been thinking about it more since then, because I think a lot of times when you're on a show or you're in the public eye, you get asked a lot of the same things about your show, questions about your character that you play or whatever. But then there's always something that comes out of left field, like once every, I don't know, 10 interviews or something, where you're like, what? And sometimes it's great. But I was remembering back, I was on a red carpet for a store opening. It was like fun.
Sounds funny already.
Is funny. It's like, what are we doing? What is this? But it was I love Funko Pops. They're these collectible little things.
Too.
And so there was the store opening in Hollywood, which if you haven't been, you got to go because it's so cool in there.
Okay.
So I was just excited to go because I'm a fan of the product. And there was a little red carpet or whatever. I was like, great, let's do it. Sounds fun. So I'm going through and, you know, a lot of people are asking like, why are you here? Or like, what's your connection? And I'm basically like, oh, I'm just a nerd who collects these. And I'm really excited I get to be at the opening. And then I got to the last gal, and I want to preface this by saying she was lovely. This is not, I am not vilifying this person, but her first question was like, and I think it was like November or something, and she was like, you know, what are you going to do to lose weight and in the new year? Like, what's your New Year's resolution? Like, you know, the holidays are coming. How are you going to combat that?
And but I like just, asking it with the phrase, what are you going to do to lose weight? Like, that would for sure be your New Year's resolution.
Right. And like, okay. Exactly. And like preemptive also, which I also love, is that it's like, so you're obviously going to gain a lot of weight over the holidays, you hog. How are you going to combat that when you have to get back to television? And so I kind of like laughed, which I do when I'm uncomfortable. And then I just said, like, I don't think about that. I was like, that's not really something that I keep in the forefront of my mind. I'm healthy. I've, you know, seen a lot of friends this year go through cancer, which is the truth. And I said, it really kind of made me value things, you know, more than that. And so if I gain a few pounds over the holidays, I'm just not going to sweat it. And she was like, oh.
That's such a good answer.
Thank you so much. And so I thought, I've done it. And she was aghast, like, oh, like I, and then she goes, okay, but like, what are you going to do to work out? And I just repeated myself and I was like, I'm not going to focus on that. I'm just going to focus on connections between my loved ones and I'm not going to worry. You know, my personal mantra in life is eat the brie, because at the end of the day, it's like, you know, life is fleeting. Enjoy it while you can. And she, I am not kidding you. She must have five times reiterated her question again. She's like, yeah, okay, I understand. But like, what are your tips though when you need? And I'm like, I'm just not going to. And then I finally said, I was like, you know, I just think that there are so many stories out there for young girls to read. And I know that I grew up reading so much content about like how to get your body perfect, how you can, you know, and I'm like, I just don't want to be a part of that. And I think there's a lot of more interesting things to talk about. I was like, also, we're at a toy store opening.
I mean, like, I want to find just all the funny in this, but like, you just gave me goosebumps. I almost fucking cried because like that answer is so fucking good for like, not only good to actually have that feeling within you, but like good for people like kids and teenagers. And I think like you, I remember every single diet that was advertised and how you have to fix yourself every New Year's. I would get all the magazines about like New Year, New You, and fix everything wrong with me. And to hear someone say that, I think on a recovery is just so, I mean, you just made me love you so much. But also, I do like to think that people don't ever mean to be bad. So did she speak English? Like, was she, because if she asked it again and again, maybe she didn't understand.
It seemed to be her first language. You know what it was? It felt like she was very young and it felt like this is a question that she probably asks a lot of people, and a lot of people will just give the answer like, I do paleo, I do keto, I do whatever. Yeah. And for me, whatever my relationship is to wherever I am in the moment is one thing. But again, I'm such a proponent that it's like, first of all, our health is our own business. And second of all, it's just not a narrative that we need to continue. Like the narrative about like, what do celebrities do or whatever? It's just so 80s, if that makes any sense to me.
It makes complete sense. And what I admire about you, though, is that you would come up with that question, because I can see myself in the same circumstance, not anymore, because I now know I'm going to take your answer. But I would definitely see myself like laughing, haha, and be like, I'd lean into it even more and make it worse. I'd be like, oh, I don't know if I'll ever be able to lose all the weight I gain from eating all the things I'm gonna, like, I will go that route before standing up for myself. But when you say it like that, it sounds like to me you're standing up for like me and other people, and it's just, so I'm totally going to, I hope somebody asked
steal
me.
It, please. Absolutely. And then the story that I do, the follow-up to all of this is that the story I told in the moment was that I was like, look, and this is true. I was like, you know, my last New Year's resolution was to stop speaking about my body negatively, both to myself or to anybody else. It was such a powerful shift for me. And I've talked about this a lot since, because the joke is that I think it was the article that this gal ended up writing was basically like incredulous that it was like, Lauren Ash says that she doesn't talk to herself negatively. Can you believe it? Which is hilarious on a lot of levels, unless you really start to dissect it. And then I'm like, what do you mean? But anyway, this has become like such a huge part of what my narrative is now doing press that it's been interesting to see that it's like just standing my ground and being like, I'm not going to play the game that you want to. I'm going to play my own game. Is very non-Canadian of me, first of all. Yeah. But second of all, it's been like such a positive dialogue, I feel like, that's been opened up in subsequent interviews, which is great.
And that's interesting that it becomes your narrative. That's the thing. It becomes from that one moment of, I hate that. I don't ever want to be someone who says speaking their truth. But like,
we're going there. We're knee deep in it at this point. Don't even.
So when I was doing my research on you, my deep dive.
Yes.
I read that, and me and my writing partner for Hump Day, because I also get why that woman planned a question. And sometimes you're like, oh, I don't know what else to ask.
Totally.
A question to plan. Anyways, but I read that thing and I said, oh my God, we should do this. And then all that day we started being like, every time we were going to say something bad, I was like, God, I love my ass. I love my ass.
Yes.
If I wanted to say something like, oh, my stomach's big. Ever. It is such a good paradigm shift, because I would find it hard to just pretend I love the things about myself that I don't. But what I took away from yours is there are things I think that are pretty great about me. And if I just, instead of doing those bad ones, lean into the good ones, I can do that. And it does really change stuff.
It You're really healthy. Does.
You're very healthy for me.
I'm so glad. Listen, I'm so glad. This makes me so happy. But you know, and it's interesting because I posted about some of this on my social media, and there was like a body positivity, I don't know, expert? I don't know. But she offered something that was also interesting, which was, because I have had women, and this is a little bit heartbreaking, but I have had women write to me and say, I literally can't name anything that I like about myself physically. And this woman's suggestion on a comment was, if you're in a place where you can't see that yet, make neutral statements about your body. So it's like, my eyes are green. My hair
like
is long.
Your exercise.
Like, right? Exactly.
Your eyes are green. Like, just state the facts.
Just state the facts. And the idea is that slowly, hopefully, if you continue to do that practice, you'll be able to say, my eyes are green and they're quite pretty or whatever. Is the
yeah.
Whole. But I thought that was interesting, too. For those listeners who are listening saying maybe they feel a little bit hopeless about the whole thing, I think that was like an interesting way in.
But I think you can also, like what you said about, you've known a lot of people with cancer this year, and even with COVID, like, health is something I think at times we all take for granted. And especially, I'll speak for myself, like, I never thought anything would stop a production going, or because I know I've been an actress since I was a kid. And like, if you're sick, they give you a bucket and you like throw up and you do the scene and you act happy and like that kind of thing. So when COVID happened, I was like in awe, because I won't take a vacation because maybe I'll get a job and all that stuff. But to see the whole world shut down because of health is such a wake-up call. And I'll be trapped having to face ourselves mostly alone.
Yeah.
And it's such a good way to start that thing, because I think if you don't like anything about yourself, let's say, you can go with like, I'm alive and healthy. You can't, like, I can very much go down a gratitude rabbit hole of like,
sure.
But I go extreme though. I end up making myself feel so bad, because I'm like, you're not starving to death. You're not, what do you have to, you don't have COVID. You're breathing like terrible. And then I feel so bad for being alive.
I know.
So I go a little far.
But listen, and I understand that too. And obviously all of that is true, but I also am a proponent that it's like, but our experience is our experience, and we have to feel the things we have to feel in order to no longer feel them. You know, like for me, it's like, if I just let myself sit in something, then it usually passes quicker than me fighting it, judging it. Like, how dare you feel that way? It's like, well, I'm feeling it, so it's there.
God, that's like a year of $250 a week therapy for me. To let yourself feel the feelings instead of judging them is such a change in everything. Because I would definitely be like, why are you feeling this way? It's stupid.
No, but I lived through that. Absolutely. Like, I went through a whole time in my life where it's exactly what you're saying. How can I be upset? I have this amazing job. I have this amazing friend group. I have all these amazing things. How can I be feeling this way? And it was like, well, you are.
Yeah.
So maybe just feel it. And then I found personally that, yeah, it just, it fades quicker when you just accept that it's like, I feel shitty. I'm going to sit in the shit today. Maybe I'll eat some McDonald's fries. And then the next day I'm like, I don't feel so bad anymore. You know?
Yeah. I was told like, and this worked for me a lot, was treat yourself like you would if you were your baby or you were your child or you were your friend. Like, because anytime I switch that in my head and say the same things I am saying to myself, I would never.
Right.
I would never, and I would always be on the other person's side. There's actually this funny story of this. I did this show called 12 Monkeys, and there's an actress on there, Amanda Shule, who is one of the most confident, beautiful women I know. And she was a ballerina, very like strong, confident, assertive, but never like, not bitch, not any of that. So anyway, she was telling me the story of, and I hope she's okay with me telling this. It's my favorite story of all time. And it's hers. But it translates to me. So she was telling me the story of when she did a center stage, and it was which was a big ballerina movie, and it was her first thing. She was a ballerina, was chosen. She wasn't an actor, and it was her first time doing a movie. And so at the beginning of the movie, she wore these jeans. And then by like, you know, you don't shoot in order. And at the end of the movie, the wardrobe guy brought in her jeans. And after being on a movie set, which I don't know what it's like now, but it's always, food is always being passed around, always. And brought her jeans and they didn't fit her. And she's like, oh, these are the wrong jeans. And he was like, no, they're the right ones. And she's like, that's crazy. These are wrong. And then she went to J. Crew, where she was trying on clothes and she was always a size zero. And she put it on and she went to her boyfriend and she's like, they changed the sizes in J. Crew, which that mindset, which I'd had the same experience on Shits, where they accidentally switched my jeans with Sarah Levy's jeans. And I put on these jeans in my trailer and I was like crying. I'm like, what have I done?
Oh no.
And then I went out and then Sarah, I'm like, got them on. And then I put the plaid shirt over it. And then Sarah was next to me. She's like, oh, my jeans they're so baggy. And I looked over and I was like, oh my God. But my first instinct is always not to be on my own team.
Right.
And so we made this joke on set too with Amanda Shule, was because at one point I had to do this monologue as my character to a public speaking thing. And I'm not good with public speaking things at all. And I was really nervous. And she's like, you know, what my mom used to tell me was that I'm Amanda Shule and I can do anything, when I would go out to these ballet things. And so I went out and I'm like, oh, yeah, I am Amanda Shule and I can do anything. And she's like, no, you're supposed to say it as you. And I'm like, no, I am Amanda Shule. And so now to this day, when I need to do something where I need to like be on my side and believe in myself, I'm like, I am Amanda Shule and I can do anything.
I love that so much. That's amazing. I love that. But I know that feeling you mean too, that it's like, why wasn't I on my own team about this? Why didn't I say these might not be my jeans? Like,
yeah. But I love the boldness of like J. Crew totally changed the sizes.
The entire corporation.
Yes.
You know what? If I'm going to have a moment of weakness, I'm going to keep this in mind and I'm going to be Amanda Shule, who can do anything. I'm going to remember this for life.
She's really funny and great. Yeah.
I love it. Oh my God, this is so funny. So, questionable questions, again, the theme of the show. Did you think of anything, any specific stories come to mind for you?
Yeah, like at first though, I was like, what I hate is being asked a question that's not a question. Like
right.
When you're on the red carpet and it's like, you're at the Emmys and I know what I'm supposed to do. I know I'm supposed to be like, yeah, blah, blah, or like back in Canada.
Sure.
Like, there's no question. I find that really difficult. So I question that is a question.
Yes.
So I hate that. But then I got this question in my inbox in a subject line from an AD. This was, again, the show 12 Monkeys, where, to give context to this, I played, I don't know, have you seen the movie 12
Monkeys? I have, yes.
Okay, so I played the Brad Pitt part. Like, I played a crazy person.
Amazing.
And I get this email from the AD, and the subject line is, how do you feel about spiders? Okay. So.
Oh, no.
I could barely open that email. I don't even know if this is sticking on theme, but that's the first thing that came to mind.
Yes, absolutely.
How I feel about spiders is that I don't want to feel...
Don't feel good.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese called and he was like, you're in the movie, you just have to be in a vat of spiders. I say, no, yeah. Martin Scorsese, yeah. No, I can't. So I told them, I'm like, it's a really big no for me. Because I was supposed to do this torture scene where my character was being tortured with all these creepy things, but I was like, didn't care. I had to act like I didn't care. Had it been, it was something where I had to be scared, I might be like, oh, I want to act really well.
Sure.
So then I was like, no. And then they get back to me with like, how do you feel about a tail whip scorpion? And I'm like, scorpion's better than spider. If we're on the island, scorpion's better. And I never even know what a tail whip scorpion is. A tail whip scorpion is basically a scorpion that looks exactly like a spider.
Oh, God damn it. No.
And so when they did this scene, I had a meet and greet with the tail whip scorpion. I got used to it, whatever. And people can go and look at this on, if you go down back enough on my Instagram, there is a video that I was sent because it's like footage on the cutting room floor of this scorpion crawling up me. And I'm like laughing because I'm supposed to love it. And it crawls in my fucking mouth.
Oh my God.
And you hear everyone like watching the monitor being like, oh my God. Oh my God. It's disgusting. And I'm still like, they're not calling cut. I'm from Canada, child actor, keep acting.
God.
Yes. And then also, I mean, this is very off topic, but like that torture scene, I also had a rat poop in my mouth because again, I was laughing and they were dangling this rat. And this was during rehearsal. I'm laughing, the rat poops in my mouth. And the trainer's like, the rat wrangler is like, oh, it's his first time. He was nervous.
Oh,
no joke. So anyways... So I guess that works with questionable questions and animal working with animals, which.
Oh.
So.
And you give the rat some ammonium. That is unbelievable.
So, and I love that I do have the footage of that thing because I always felt like, you know, I did that and no one saw it. I did that. I went through that. So.
Oh, yeah. Which feels so unjust. Now, in this scene, I'm assuming you're like strapped down or something, yeah. Right? Oh, my God. So it's even worse because you have that. You're completely out of control.
Yeah. Well,
you can't just instinctively like hit the scorpion out of your mouth.
Totally. But like my whole thing was I'm supposed to not care about this. That was the hard part because I was supposed to love this king shit.
Oh,
so yeah, it was like the hardest acting I've ever done.
Well, you know what's funny about this story is you've touched on one of my biggest fears, both in just in general, but also in my career. Spiders is my thing. Like I can't. I'll fuck with a rat. I'll fuck with a snake.
Me too,
like
I'm fine with the rat.
Yeah, I'll do that. But for me, a spider is like you're saying. I'm like $1 million. You have to do 10 seconds. I'm like, I don't think I could physically do it. Like it's one of my biggest fears is that I'll ever get asked to do something with spiders. I was on a show called Scare Tactics, which is a hidden camera prank show many seasons. And I got a similar email to you one night, which was, and the subject for me was, how do you feel about snakes? That was the one I got.
My God.
Yeah. And so I said, I was like, all right, fine. What's the bit? And the bit was that I was supposed to look like a pregnant woman who was having a problem and had come into the doctor's office. And something goes wrong and they have to like cut open my belly and snakes come out. Sorry, I wasn't pregnant. That was the bit. I looked pregnant, but I'm like, I'm not pregnant. I don't know what's going on. They cut me open and all these snakes and mealworms crawl out of me.
No.
But in order to physically do this bit, I had to be strapped to a table with the belly built into the table so that the animal wrangler could shove the snakes and the mealworms up through the bottom of the table. So I am physically tied to a table and I have all these snakes crawling up into my face. And the worst part was the mealworms because they stink. They smell like shit. And they're crawling all over me. And I'll never forget, we called the first person we pranked. I am acting my ass off. Like I'm fully sobbing, hyperventilating, screaming like, help me. And the person we're pranking is not buying it. Is literally just like totally bored. We reveal, they're like, yeah, we knew, like, whatever, blah, blah. And I was just like, I've never given a performance like this in my life. How dare this person? And then they finally unhook me from the table so I can take a break before we do it again. and I feel something in my pants. And I rip my pants down because I'm like, there's a snake in my pants! There's a snake in my pants! I pull it down. It's my microphone cord. So,
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
I'm literally standing in my underwear in front of our entire almost all male crew.
Because
I thought I had a snake in my pants, which was great. God. But
you win, though, by the way. I always thought I had the best, like, worst story of this. That is horrible. Horrible.
Nothing went in my mouth. If I had to say who won, I would say you having a scorpion or rat shit in your mouth.
My biggest fear of spiders or things like that, but mostly spiders, is that I see the spider and I go to kill the spider and miss it and then can't find it all night. That spider with revenge. That spider wants to fucking kill you. And that spider's going to get its friend spiders, because I heard about this, that there are certain kind of spiders that if they let out a scent, if you smash them, they let out a scent to get all the other spiders to come and revenge you. So that every time I see a spider, I'm like, I get somebody to kill it. And if they're going to kill it, you got to really fucking make sure that thing's dead and no scent and in the toilet. And
oh my God, that the fact that that existed in nature for some reason, like, that's an abomination. Like, to me, it's like, because I always say, I've said this many times, get rid of the spiders. They're abominations. And people are like, they're good for whatever. And I'm like, bullshit. They eat bugs, so do birds. Like, we don't need spiders. We don't need the giant bird-eating ones. And we don't need ones that send off a scent to have their spider gang get revenge.
Yes. Oh my God.
Wow. I mean, listen, the hardest working Canadian actresses on the planet.
I need to see this scare tech. I can't believe you were on that show. Yeah. I did my research and I don't know why that didn't.
It was 10 years ago, but it was re-released on Netflix about a year ago. So there's been this like renewed kind of fandom, which has been pretty fun. But yeah, it's the craziest thing I've ever been a part of, or I'm sure will ever be a part of. It was wild. It was so fun, but it was wild.
Yeah.
Got to move on to Dumb Lies We Tell, a segment where I have listeners send in dumb lies they've told. That's where we're at. I'm losing my words. If you have a dumb lie that you have told, dear listeners, email me at dumbliesweetell@gmail.com and maybe I'll read it on the show, like I'm going to read this one. So this is coming from a female listener, and this just, I think, well, I'll read it for you and you'll see why this one made me laugh. It says, hello. I'm a huge fan of the podcast, and today I caught myself in a dumb lie. So this is important to remember right away, because she says today she's caught it. And just listen to the story.
Okay.
For a couple of months, I've been seeing a guy who fancies himself a sort of beverage connoisseur. Last week, he brought me a 2 liter of soda he had bought, but didn't like. Beverage
he
connoisseur.
Didn't want it, or she didn't.
He said he bought it to try, but he didn't like it. So he brought it to her.
Okay.
And she says, I tried it and I didn't like it either, but for some reason I said I did and agreed to keep it so that it wouldn't go to waste. But what I also love is, keep in mind, she started this by saying, today I caught myself in a dumb lie, and she's already established that this started months ago.
She's trapped in her house with all these bottles of like so many. She subscribed and saved to from Amazon delivery. It keeps coming. So many bottles.
So many bottles of this terrible swill. Okay. So she said, I agreed to keep it so it wouldn't go to waste. I tried to drink some the next day when he wasn't there, but I still hated it and ended up pouring the glass out. Each day I've poured a little more out, so when he comes to my house, it presents the appearance that I've been drinking it. Yesterday, before he came over, I even poured some over a glass of ice, then dumped out the soda to make it look like I just finished a glass before he got there. For the life of me, I cannot figure out why I didn't just agree that it wasn't good in the first place. Now, I can't determine whether I should tell him that I didn't like it or just hope he doesn't give me more when I finish the bottle I have. Am I going to be stuck drinking this for the rest of our relationship? What if we get married? This is why I swore off dating for several years.
I feel like, did I sleep write that to you? Because I feel like I 100% get that.
Oh, yeah.
I would do that, have done that. And I get getting this deep in. I think, though, my recommendation would be, if he's funny, he will really appreciate this story.
Oh, yeah.
If my significant other told me this, I would die laughing and I would love them more. Do you get it, though? Like, I totally get that. I
I'm wondering, and dear listener, if you are listening, I want you to send us a follow-up email because I need to know if you're Canadian, because this is such a Canadian thing to do where it's like, this person has brought me something. I want to like it, to be positive and to, you know, say yes, because we don't love to say no. But what I love is when it gets to the detail of like, I pour a glass of ice, I pour the soda over the ice, I let it melt for a second, I pour the liquid out, but I leave the ice with the essence of the shitty soda.
I want to know what this beverage is.
That was going to be my next question too. What is this weird soda? Is it like, you know?
Bad.
Yeah, is it that it's that bad? Because she does describe this guy as a beverage connoisseur. So maybe it is some sort of kind of, you know.
I could see myself doing the following, though, to get out of this. I could see myself at one point being like, this tastes different today. I used to love it. I think my taste buds have changed because this medication I have, I looked on the side effects and it says might change taste and sense of smell. Oh my God, that sucks. I can't drink my favorite soda anymore. That's what we do.
Oh my God, I was laughing so hard I knocked over my microphone. It's like how big does the lie have to get that it's a side effect of a medication? That is hilarious. And my favorite thing about this segment in general is I love the human nature, like a dumb lie, like a lie that it's like is so meaningless. No one gets hurt either way. It's just so like such a dumb choice. And this is the personification to me of a classic dumb lie, which is amazing.
I've been watching a lot of Catfish recently.
I love Catfish.
Me too. I'm Love obsessed it. With that show. I really want to be a co-host on that show. If you're listening, anyways, I go on each show to get another. Yeah.
Listen, you've got a business model and so far it's working and I respect it.
But watching that, and it was like, it's regularly like this, that it starts with a little lie, but like this one woman last night, I get the thinking behind, she ended up doing a horrible thing. Like she did a lot of horrible things, but one of the horrible things was make a GoFundMe for her daughter for a leg cancer that she didn't have a daughter, all those things. And they were like, this is evil. Why did you do this? And she's like, oh, because I had to like prove the other lie she told about having a daughter.
Right.
And then the daughter was being sick. She had to give the daughter a disease, had to like, and I can see the nightmare of how far that goes and how it must be like so stressful.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
There was a time when I, a while ago, overshare, was a cheating. And and it was, even though the circumstances make it okay that I was, but anyways, I still didn't feel good about it.
Listen, no judgment here.
I was the occupation of keeping a secret like that. Oh. It changes you. And it made me into a crazy person of like paranoid all the time. I would look at their phone and be like, assume they were like eating or doing that thing. And I realized like after that was out of my life, I just realized how bad it was for me. Like obviously it was terrible for the person, but like how horrible it was an experience for me. I got nothing good out of it. And so then I have really kind of gone on this very expensive therapy path of being real honest, real honest. And I need to talk myself into saying things like, if somebody asks me out on a date and I don't want to go, not to say, oh, my grandmother died this weekend.
Sure.
And have to remember that she's dead. I can't kill her again. So all those things, right?
Yeah.
So now I really say things like, I'm sorry, I don't have those feelings. It's so hard to create these, but to be really honest, instead of saying things like, I'm in a relationship if I'm not, or I'm in, because it spirals.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, I've gone on multiple dates that I didn't want to go on because I just didn't want to be honest, and then at the end of it, I'm like, what am I doing?
Oh, yeah.
Why did I do this?
Oh, I've been in relationships that started that way. Because I think it's hard when the line is like, you don't hate them. They're a nice person. They're all those things. But like, they like you more than you like them. And as a Canadian and maybe pathologically problemed, I feel like if they like me, I have to like them back.
Yeah.
I have to make them feel good.
Yeah.
And like, I'm only saying this now because I've done a lot of therapy and I know that's a bad thing to do. I don't do it anymore. But
oh, listen, I've absolutely same with me, 100%. And I wonder if that is something that a lot of Canadians share. That like, oh, well, this person likes me, so I should give them a chance. It's like, why? Like, well, if you're not interested, that's okay. Like,
okay about that. It was like mean of me to not. Well, how do I know they're not a great person?
Yes, this is absolutely. Yeah. No, we're cut from the same cloth, my friend, because I have been down that road so many times.
What I realized, though, in the first time I did it, when I had gone on a date with someone, I find this even harder, when you suss out whether you like someone and then you go on a date and realize you don't, that's really hard for me to get out of. And when I finally did the thing of like, they asked me out again and I was like, don't feel the spark. That's a good one. I don't feel a spark thing. The response was so great. And I really underestimated the person. It's actually a little arrogant to think that they can't handle like, oh, I'm not interested. Like they'll be crushed and die. Like when I thought of it like that and got the response back of like, cool, then we could be friends or we didn't. And I didn't have this constant burden to like keep up this lie.
You know what? It's so true. And I agree with you that it is like, why do I think that I have this much weight in this person's life? And if I'm just honest, the times I have been on the same thing where it's like, oh, thanks for your honesty. It's like, oh, that went so much easier than I thought it would. Very quickly, I forgot about this dumb lie, but there was a guy that I went out with based on this whole thing. Like it was like, well, he likes me. I guess I should. This was years and years ago. And our date was fine, but I was kind of like not really into it. And then he asked me out again and I went out with him again. And then he had made me, bless, this is so sweet. He had made me a CD of songs. And it was in that moment that I realized I was like, oh, I can't do this. And I didn't know how to handle it. And listen, I did end up having a panic attack is the truth. After the second date, I was so overwhelmed with guilt and all of the above. Yeah. I started to have this anxiety attack. And so I sent him a message that was like, look, I can't continue. I'm having a lot of anxiety. And he kind of like pressed a little bit. And then I was like, I think I'm just not over my last relationship or something. I said something to that extent. And he was like, okay, I get it. No problem. But then here's the follow-up to this is that the next time I saw him, he was like, I have the name and number of a good therapist. And I really think that you could benefit from
That's great.
It's like I just ran into him somewhere and he was like, I've been hoping to run into you because I really think that you need some like serious therapy. And I was like, in my mind, I was like, I do, but not for the reason.
Not for that. To be able to say, I don't actually like you when you've made a mix CD for me. I couldn't do that.
And it was, that's a hard thing, or that was a hard thing for me anyway at the time. But yeah, it did not shake out the way I had hoped.
Yeah. I mean, when you asked me about this dumb lie, the first lie that came to mind is the dumbest lie that still hasn't been confessed yet. And I feel like, okay, so it's so stupid because I had a boyfriend when I was like a teenager and he was the first person that I had sex with, but I told him he wasn't. I was like, no, you're not. And then years later, like almost a decade later, we ran into each other and he's like, I always wanted to ask you, was that true? Was that? And I'm like, yeah, no, you weren't. No, I did not for some, and no reason. It wasn't like I'd slept with somebody I didn't know, whatever. Right. This was like very good experience, all those things, but I didn't want him to have that. And this was like my boyfriend's, no. And like, there was evidence to the contrary, which I, whatever, said was other things.
Right.
And so, person, you got me.
You heard it here first. That is hilarious. The doubling down a decade later is amazing.
That was it. And for the fact that he would ask me that meant that like I was lying. And I had the and then I was like even worse. I was even like worse.
I love that you were like, I just didn't want him to have the satisfaction. I love that really so much. Like,
I don't know why, because it wasn't like some dick guy. He was like a nice boyfriend.
I love that so much. And listen, you know what? Maybe he deserved it. Maybe it's like, maybe this shaped him and kept him, you know, kept him humble.
Yeah. Yeah.
You did him a favor as far as I'm concerned. And listen, you've come clean now. So you're good. You're good.
Yeah.
Oh my God. This is such a joy. We're going to move on to a little segment called Never Let Go. It's a segment about grudges. Are you a grudge holder?
Well, that's the thing. So when I, this was one that I looked at and I had a really hard time thinking of what I don't let go of, just because I realized that it's like, if somebody just doesn't like me, I decide right. I will never, ever, I will never acknowledge them. I will never, and like, if somebody doesn't text me back, I will never retext them ever again,
right.
ever. So I go to an extreme and I realize like, I never let go of everything. Yeah. So I couldn't think of anything specific. Oh, I mean, I did think of some reviews, like somebody in the Toronto Star said, Emily Hampshire needs a leash. I will never forget that.
That's a disgusting thing to say.
Well, I think though, because it was so specific and probably true from his opinion that like, I mean, and so I think the truer the thing is, the more ouch. That and
yeah,
I don't
know. Yet. I don't care for it. That feels like some latent misogyny to me, but
yeah. It was, so yeah, I think I am very much, but I'm also the opposite where if somebody does anything for me, like just opens a door for my rest of my life, I will be like, I'll make that like you just saved my life. And like, so I'm pretty extreme.
Listen, I appreciate that. And I'm the same way. Definitely. I always refer to myself as like an elephant because they say elephants never forget. It's like, I never forget a right and I never forget a wrong. You know what I mean?
What's yours? Do you have?
Well, there was one I thought of that actually connected to the theme, which I don't always do, but about questionable questions. And this is saying something because I was 3 years old and I remember it vividly. So this is like, this was actually like a life changing yeah. moment for me. And it was the dead of summer in Belleville, Ontario, Canada. And my mom took me to the McDonald's in my hometown because there was this outdoor performance that had been advertised featuring the McDonald's characters. So there was Ronald McDonald, Grimace, Birdie, the Hamburglar, the whole gang.
Yeah, all my friends.
All my favorite people at the time, still to this day. So she took me down there and I remember it was the dead of summer. It was so hot. And now I feel for these performers in these costumes. It must have been hell. But I was wearing, I love that I remember everything. I was wearing a red bathing suit that had navy blue tugboats on it and a pair of white sandals. Like this is so burned wow. in my memory. I was three and I was very shy as a child, which is ironic now, but I was very, very, very shy. And I was watching the show and I was really enjoying it. And there was a little crowd that had formed and I was really enjoying what was going on. And then they were like, Ronald was like, Ron, he was yeah. like, we need a volunteer from the audience. And I was like, ready to step behind my mother because I was just like, this is not for me. Oh. And he literally goes, how about you, little girl? Why don't you get up on stage? And it was because they wanted to do some sort of orchestra bit. And he's like, we need a conductor. What about you? But I'll never forget this. What about you, little girl? Why don't you come on stage? And then I did get behind my mother and like hid. And then look. I don't know if this is just my child brain memory or if this is what he actually said, but what my memory was is he said, come on, what are you doing? Do you want to ruin it for everybody?
Oh my God, that will define your life.
And I yes, I burst into uncontrollable sobs. My mother literally had to like pick me up and take me into the restaurant because I was just terrified. Embarrassed, ashamed. I felt like I'd let them down, all of the above. And it started from that day, a deep-seated fear of clowns, deep. to this day, I don't love them. Like I know it's a common fear, but for me, it's different. It's not about like the normal fear. It's about like, what part of me are you going to point out that I don't want talked about? Are you going to make me feel shameful about something? But yeah, I really do hold a grudge because to me, it's like if you are trying to get a child in general to volunteer for something and their body language says no.
Yeah.
Move on yeah. to another child. Don't, regardless of what he said is my point, whether it was my child memory is correct or incorrect, he yeah. did double down and did point me out again and said basically like, why aren't you doing this?
And in front of everyone, that's like.
In front of everyone. Yeah, it was bad.
What's funny is as you were telling that story at the beginning, like, who wants to be up? I thought it was going to go this way because this is what I would never forget. I'd be like, me, and he doesn't pick me. Never forget that fucking Ronald McDonald. I'm never going to do anything for you ever again.
Never again.
But the don't ruin it for everyone.
Yeah, that's what I vividly remember. And I think I was right. I think that is what he said because I just remember everything with such vivid detail that I feel like, and it was something that was just like so cutting and to the point that my mom was like, we got to get out of here. Like, this is weird.
Yeah. I do remember things like that though. Like, especially like my mother saying like, nobody likes anyone with a big head. Don't ever like talk about yourself, any of that kind of stuff. Like anything that's even close to self-confidence in terms of saying you've done anything good, people don't like people like that.
Yeah.
So I do have this thing of like, always squish myself like that. And that's very Canadian again.
Oh, yeah.
But I do remember that also, that she told me a story about a girl in her class when I think I'd been sent home from school for kissing somebody underneath the tires, French kissing in grade 4.
Oh, la la.
Yeah. She said this story about a girl in her school, and everyone started calling her Horsey Jane. And Horsey Jane, nobody liked Horsey Jane. And so that's all I remember. I don't even, but like, then I just learned the lesson of no one likes Horsey Jane. So that's, I don't know what, those are the two things that stick with me.
And you know what? It is amazing what things do stick with you and what things do like shape you long term. And I can totally see that being something that's like, it's yeah. like those weird terms or those different things that like plants.
I feel shaped by your story. Like, I feel like, oh, now I'm going to think, oh, do you want to ruin it for everyone, Emily? You don't want to like do the podcast?
Oh my God. This is such a joy. Listen, we got to wrap it up. We've been talking for an hour. I got to tell you, you are such a delight. I really hope that we can, continue this friendship because I just adore you.
You are very healthy for me. And I hope to be able to give something back to you because I don't want to ruin it for everyone.
You have not. You have exceeded. You have succeeded and exceeded. How about that?
Thank you. This was a joy in my quarantine. And so thank you very much. This was like a pleasure.
Oh my gosh. You are a complete pleasure. For those listening at home, where can they follow you on social media?
I'm on Instagram. I mean, I'm on all of them, but I really just Instagram and then I push it through to the other one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I am there, Emily Hampshire on Instagram. And if you scroll real down, you'll find that tail whip scorpion looks exactly like a spider crawling into my mouth.
I'm going to watch it, but I'm going to do it in the daytime so that I hopefully don't have nightmares.
And I'm going to watch your scare
tactics. Yes. I got to see if I can find that specific one. I'll send you a link because it was, it was really something.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here, Emily Hampshire. You're such a delight and I appreciate you so much.
Thank you. Do I just leave now?
You can. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. I love you. I really do want to be your friend. Thank you. Bye.
Oh my God, just the best. I adore you. She's so cute. Oh my gosh. All right, it's time for the final segment on Giving It Up for Less. It is, last thing I'll say, of course, a segment dedicated to the Black Lives Matter movement. I was looking into some kind of resources because I've been feeling a little overwhelmed this week about like, what's next? What can I do? And I found an amazing link. I'm going to put it in the bio on the Giving It Up for Less podcast Instagram, GIUFL pod on Instagram. So you can find it there. Marie Claire, the ladies magazine, has an amazing article called How Can I Become a Better White Ally? Do not ask a person of color to educate you. This work is on you, which I completely agree. So what's amazing is this is an article that's kind of broken down a lot of very simple resources in all kind of different walks of life. There is books. There are different educators that you can follow on social media. There's things about, Black filmmakers, Black creatives, where you can find their work, where you can follow them online. I just found like it was actually a really great kind of place to start or a place to kind of refresh. Because as I mentioned in last week's podcast, I was feeling a little bit like, the Black Lives Matter movement was so huge and I feel like it's fading a little bit for people. And I feel like we need to do everything we can to avoid that happening. So this was really getting me amped up in different ways that I can help, different things that I can read, follow, et cetera. So I would really encourage you to go to the Giving It Up for Less Instagram, GIUFL pod, and click on the link in the bio. And you're going to find this great article from Marie Claire, How Can I Become a Better White Ally? So that's my challenge to you for this week. Once again, a reminder, as the time of this recording happened, Breonna Taylor's killers has still not been brought to justice. So let's continue to shout her name very loudly on all social media platforms. And hopefully we can get justice for this woman. Thank you so much for listening to Giving It Up for Less. If you have a dumb lie, email us at dumbliesweTell@gmail.com. Maybe we will read it, maybe we won't. But you don't know unless you play. So that's how it works. Have a great day, everybody, and a great week.